The director of the National Journalism Center discusses how his program works to improve gun reporting and how I help. That and more on this episode of the Weekly Reload Podcast.
No, the devil's got no hold on me.
Ooh. All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Weekly Reload Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Gutowski. I'm also a CNN contributor and the founder of thereload.com, where you can head over and sign up for our free newsletter today if you want to keep up to date with what's going on with guns in America. You can also, of course, buy a membership if you want to help support our reporting and get access to hundreds of pieces of analysis that you won't find anywhere else. You also, of course, get this show a day early and the opportunity to appear on the show in a member segment. Just reply to your exclusive Sunday newsletter that you'll also get with a membership. This week on the show, we are going to be talking a little bit about guns and media and one of the programs that's out there that tries to address some of the issues that are common in reporting on firearms that we see in the news industry. And so to do that, we have with us today T. Beckett Adams, who's the director of the National Journalism Center over at Young Marist Foundation. Welcome to the show, Beckett.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Can you tell people a little bit more about what NJC is, the National Journalism Center, and a little bit about your own background as well?
Sure. So kind of the Reader's Digest version, the National Journalism Center was founded in 1977 with a very simple sort of mandate, which was to train journalists in responsible truth-seeking reporting, no matter what the cost or, you know, which party might be affected by it. And even more now than ever, the messages and the mandate of the program is crucial. As I feel many newsrooms, whether we're talking left or right, specifically, especially on the left, have moved very sort of hard into these areas where the main thing is whether or not their reporting may hurt the preferred narratives or the preferred party or candidate, et cetera, et cetera. So what we do right now is that we take all kinds and we just train aspiring journalists, with young people who want to get into the business. And Stephen, you can probably speak to this as well, but one of the things that they don't tell you a lot about journalism, at least in America, is the amount of gatekeeping that goes on. It's hard to get in at the ground level. It's hard to just walk in through the front door, especially when you have, you know, 600 other people fighting you for the same job position. So one of the things we do is we take all comers, people who want to get in, and we basically help them get through the door. We aren't the gatekeepers. We're happy to help. We're happy to network and introduce people and kind of get them a leg up. And the main thing being that we train them to just be truth-seeking, fearless reporters. That's really what we focus on. Now, I came to the NJC in 2022, kind of addressing what you were saying specifically about my background. I am currently a three-time columnist. I write every week for the National Review, Washington Examiner, and The Hill, weekly columnist. Before that, I actually went through the NJC myself in 2010, and my first gig out of there, they connected me again back to gatekeeping. They immediately connected me to a news site that needed a business reporter, so I did business reporting for a little bit, business editing, and I moved to the Washington Examiner in 2014, where I started covering politics. I covered media as a media reporter, not a lot of commentary, not a lot of, you know, opinion, just straight up, you know, Maggie Haberman moves from Politico to New York Times, just straight up news reporting.
Right.
And then eventually in 2016, I was assigned to the Clinton campaign, which at the time I wasn't happy with because I thought it would be boring. And boy, was I wrong, because there was a lot going on. And one of the huge benefits of that campaign is so few people were paying attention. It was ripe for the picking for so many scoops and original stories just because everyone was looking the other direction, understandably so. And then after 2016, I got into commentary. So I do a lot of opinion, a lot of writing about, you know, what I think is going on, because I feel I have developed a certain expertise in certain areas, specifically media criticism. And now here we are in 2024. I train young journalists while writing three columns. Some of the columns about media criticism and just some of it generally about social and cultural commentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And NJC itself, you know, it's like an internship program primarily. It's mainly college kids. Although I'm sure you, I don't know if it's only college kids. Is it only?
No, we accept all types. I mean, it's okay. Generally college students. We have, if they apply, people in high school, but no, that's generally an issue where parents aren't comfortable letting the kids come to DC. The other thing, it's in-person internship. So it's in DC. And like you were saying,
right.
It is an internship. It's 12 weeks long. We usually get college students. We do get college grads frequently, but, you know, everyone's welcome to apply, and we take all kinds. But generally, it's collegiate folk who are looking to sort of launch their careers immediately after college.
Yeah, and they do internships with different publications. I've worked with NJC interns both at the Reload for the last three years. It's almost our 3-year anniversary, by the way. But before that, at the Washington Free Beacon and CNS News, we had NJC interns that whole time. And so it's a very good program in my experience. It produces some very good writers and reporters. And so I'm happy to be able to work with you guys, both as somebody who hosts interns and then also on this program we're going to talk about. Because one of the specific things that you guys do is a firearms program, a firearms reporting program that we've created together, I guess, but that I run the training side of it. But, it's the goal is to teach the basics of reporting on firearms, try and keep the students away from some of the most common mistakes you see in major media when it comes to firearms reporting, and also give them actual real world experience with gun safety training and using a firearm in person. So tell me a little bit about your decision-making process on why you agreed to do this sort of program with me, why you thought it was a good idea, what it brings to the program in your mind.
Yeah. So like you were saying, probably the big thing that we do on top of the sort of hands-on training that I do as an instructor and my colleague, Emily Jashinsky, that we do as instructors is we do, like you're saying, in-person work placement. Mm-hmm. We actually put our interns in an actual, brick and mortar newsroom around the DC area. Free Beacon being one. Reload, you had one of our interns last summer, although technically that wasn't a brick and mortar, but you get the point. Yeah. And so one of the first things I did when I came on to NJC in 2022 is, having covered media and done a lot of as a straight news media reporter, and then later as a commentator doing media criticism, I came across the same sort of mistakes and the same sort of like almost trends. Like if it's a story about a certain topic, you can almost be guaranteed that there's going to be something wrong in it. So I kind of, as a bit of a joke, says there are three big things that you can almost set your watch to in terms of whether or not if they try to report on it, they will get it wrong. Firearms, faith, and abortion. Those are, in my mind, the three main areas that no matter where you're reading, whether it's the New York Times or USA Today, chances are they're probably going to get the basics of it wrong, because it happens to be, and we can talk about this for hours, but a lot of reporters at sort of corporate, legacy, mainstream, whatever word you prefer to use, a lot of reporters at some of these larger newsrooms simply just don't know a lot about certain topics, three being the ones that I listed. And so when I came into NJC, one of the first things I wanted to do was incorporate a sort of firearm literacy course where we could try to avoid some of the basic, very common mistakes that we see again and again. And Stephen, I know you can speak to this. One of the things I've tried to avoid in my criticism or writing is that you don't want to just nitpick and be like, ha ha, they said clip when they meant magazine. Like, that's not the point. Right. The thing where it starts to get frustrating is that you can point these things out 100 times and the editors refuse to learn and refuse to get it right, because you see the same problem over and over and over again. So one of the things that when we were putting this together, wanted to do was not just sort of beat into their heads this sort of technical language and terms of firearms, but to help them contextualize a lot about firearms, especially the AR-15. So if ever they're going to have to write about gun-related violence or Second Amendment legislation, you're not completely out of your element trying to write about, I don't even know what an AR is. I don't know what an AR looks like, let alone I don't know anything about a bump stock. And yet your editor is asking you to write about some of this stuff. So in terms of, we try to give them just basic literacy, like, hey, here's the difference between fully automatic and semi-automatic. And by the way, you cannot get fully automatic legally in this country, like very basic stuff. And then after that, we actually take them to a range. It's 100% voluntary, of course. If people are uncomfortable, we never insist upon it. Then we take them to a range where they can actually fire a firearm. And many of these students fire it for the first time in their lives. They've never even touched a gun, let alone fired one. And so it's funny too, because we get a lot of international students.
Yeah.
Like last spring, we had a gentleman from China and a gentleman from Italy, never touched a gun in their life. And the Italian was, he had a lot of fun. But he had this moment, he was like, I get it. I understand, like, sports shooting now makes sense to me. This is fun. So the idea isn't just, you know, trying to convert them and make people huge Second Amendment fans or huge gun nuts. The idea is, if you're going to write about an AR, maybe it'd be useful if at some point you've held one, you've heard one, you can now kind of contextualize in your head what people are talking about when they talk about, say, shooting sprees, shooting events, et cetera, or the legislation, the technicalities of the AR. And I kind of used this analogy before in the past, but imagine like being a reporter and you now are going to have to cover a basketball game. You can have someone describe to you how a basketball game works, but it might be useful at some point for you to sit down and actually watch a basketball game. So that's kind of the approach that we have taken.
Or playing it, right?
Or even playing it, right. Yeah. At the very least, you can watch it, just something, try to familiarize yourself. And so that's what we've been trying to do. This is just one of those blocks of like, here's an area where media frequently gets it wrong. Let's try to correct that one, you know, one young aspiring journalist at a time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that captures the core of what we're trying to do in these classes. And we just had one last Friday, as I mentioned on the podcast I was going to go do this. And so I figured it'd be a good time to, you know, get it. We've been doing this for a little while now, and I know it interests a lot of people who subscribe to Reload. And so I want to get people a little bit deeper insight into how this works and why we're doing it. And I think you captured the real core of what I think is most important in these range trips, and the classroom portion is like, it's not so much about teaching terminology, although that's part of it.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously we want to make sure they understand the difference between semi-automatic and fully automatic and try to get some of these very common mistakes that you see repeated over and over again, try to explain the different sticking points in a lot of our current gun issues that people are going to run into if they're covering this topic for a newspaper somewhere, you know, things like how the background check system actually works, what people mean by the gun show loophole, what that actually means, and the critiques of it, and so on and so forth. Like trying to give them a better grasp on some of these basic things they're likely to come across, assault weapons versus assault rifle, or what the definition of an assault weapon is and how that varies from state to state. And, you know, a lot of these things that you will hear come up very frequently if you're writing about guns. And I do think that one of the big problems, and I think we'll get into this a little bit later on sort of when we talk about media generally, but one of the big problems is that you get a lot of general interest reporters who report on guns because not a lot of outlets actually have a beat reporter that focuses on this topic. And that leads to most of these kinds of problems because the reporters not only have never had training like that, like what you guys are providing at NJC and what I'm helping you with, but also I've never spent much time writing about the issue before. Like it's something that gets worked out through beat reporting. Like you usually become more knowledgeable about a subject the more you write about it. But if you don't have, the industry doesn't have a focus on this topic as a serious, most of the industry doesn't have a focus on this topic as like a serious subject that they want to dedicate resources to. And so, you know, that becomes a big problem. But one way to combat that, I think the primary way to combat these things is through teaching information, you know, right, providing them information and providing it on a more holistic level than just AR doesn't stand for assault rifle or magazines, clips are different from magazines, or, you know, that sort of thing that, like you said, it's easy to point out as almost a gotcha thing. Like, yes, reporters should know that if they're writing about something, but also it's not the biggest.
Right.
It's more important that they understand the fundamental issues at play.
And it's crazy to me that more, like you were saying, more newsrooms don't dedicate at least some resources to getting their reporters generally versed in this. Because that's the thing, like I was saying, like when we do range day, I don't expect them to come away loving it and being big Second Amendment nuts. I don't care. I just want them to know what they're talking about when they write about it. That's all I'm asking. And the fact that we had to design and sort of invent something like this, because nothing like this exists the reason it's crazy to me is how often the firearms, the Second Amendment, the stuff is in the news. It's every 4 years, especially for presidential elections, hot topic issue. And yet newsrooms spend the bare minimum, if even that, training the reporters to understand what they're writing about, even though they're going to write about this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And it's to me, it's crazy. It's a blind spot that makes you wonder at what point is it willful or is it just plain laziness? And the reason being, it's there, it exists. So that's why one of the first things, you know, I did when I came on to NJC here was like, call you up and let's talk about how when we have these classes come through. So just real quick, we have two sessions per year, one in the spring and summer. Every year we have two sessions come through. Sometimes classes are, there's 10 students, sometimes there's 30 students. But the idea is every time, every fresh one comes in, they have to have some basic literacy in this issue. They will almost certainly write about at some point in their careers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I mean, I just think it's something where dedicating some time and resources to understanding. I mean, look, if you're reporting, you should try to dedicate some time and resources to whatever you're going to be writing about. That's your responsibility as a reporter. You need to know about these things if you're trying to inform your audience. If you don't know anything about the topic, then your audience is going to be even more clueless when you get to write a piece. That's why, obviously there's, you don't have to become an expert. You can cite experts and hopefully you'll do it in a way that's ideally you want to try and be fair to everybody in the story and give a breadth of views on the topic. It's just one of those things where I talk about this in class, like, sure, is there an ideological bent in major media? I think you could say there is, right? But
right.
And some of that comes to play in any issue, including with guns. A lot of major outlets tend to have left-leaning people in them. I mean, they had the NPR editor who just wrote about the DC office has 87 Democrats and zero Republicans. Like, it exists. I think it's clear to see. But I don't think it's what actually drives most of the issues that we see in reporting on firearms. I honestly think it has much more to do with a lack of knowledge than it does with some sort of attempt by reporters to manipulate stories to favor their ideology. Like, I just think especially for your average beat reporter, your average print reporter who's writing a story, I don't think that's their goal if they're doing this professionally. I think it's much more ignorance, like just lack of knowledge, and which is one addressable. And they should know better. To be fair.
Right. And this points to a much larger issue, which is I think a lot of reporters, and you probably know this from experience, write with a certain amount of they write with a certain amount of at ease because they know, like, look, if I mess something up, my editor at least, or the web producer is probably going to catch it. And these stories just get printed. Like, the editor doesn't catch it. The web producers don't catch it. It goes through layers and nobody catches it. So that speaks to actually a larger issue in the newsroom, which is a lot, and I think a lot of reporters do have this where they're like, I'm writing this and I think I got it right. This is how I framed it. And I think some reporters, especially the longer they're in, they slip into this habit where like, well, if my editor didn't catch it, then I assume I got it right, which is not a great assumption to ever make. But it points to the issue that you see the stuff that gets to print. And you're like, how many, like at the New York Times, like this went through at least three layers and nobody caught it.
Yeah.
So and we got to start at the bottom and just start, you can't rely on the editors or the web producers to back you up if you make a huge error, especially if you're making these errors over and over again, where that's when it starts getting really frustrating.
Yeah. And I definitely think it's more of an industry problem than it is like an individual newsroom or individual reporter issue. It's something where the industry does not value this knowledge that much, honestly. I think CNN has been a little bit better than others on this point by at least trying to go out and find people who are knowledgeable. But even if they come from different perspectives, it's really, to me, it's not so much about your ideological perspective on guns that's as much of an issue. Like, can be an issue, obviously. But it's, again, it's just lack of understanding of the basics of of everything about firearms, not just how the firearms function themselves. This is something that's, I think, unique to our class, too, is like, it's not just about, here's how the gun policy works, right? Here's how background checks work. Here's how that law works. It also is about handling a firearm. How you should properly handle a firearm and shoot it safely, right? That's another aspect. Here's, gun culture. Here's how we actually, especially with the international students that come in, we tend to spend a lot of time talking about gun culture in America and why it's right. unique.
Because they come over understandably with many questions, because them it's completely not just not just a foreign concept, but some of them it seems insane. It seems crazy to them.
Sure.
And so you get to have this chance to sort of like explain the culture behind gun culture.
Yeah, the perspective.
the perspective, the culture, and you get to have this chance. And some of the students are like, okay, well, thank you for explaining it. I now understand it. I still think it's a little insane, but
yeah, but
I know
it's not about, it doesn't seem right. Right. And it's not about them. We're not there to convince them one way or the other.
I just want them to know what they're talking about. That's all. Yeah.
And often,
bare minimum.
Right. And often they kind of want me to tell them my opinions on different topics, and that's understandable, but
you know, I feel like every session the student asks you like, so how, what's your plan to stop mass shootings? Like that happens every class.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, if we had the answer to that, we'd probably be very wealthy.
Well, it's just like, there are lots of different perspectives on here's, and I tried my best to represent what, you know, either side would argue on. Like, I try to explain the positions at play, because that's what's going to be. It's not so much as a reporter what your opinion on X topic is. It's more about being able to, you know, represent fairly what each side is saying. Now, you know, you want to obviously at a certain point, you have to report the facts of what's happening. But I think it's important to acknowledge that people can look at the same set of facts and have very different opinions on what to do from that point. And it's best to try and give people those opinions from either side and try to, you know, do them in a way that's fair and representative of what the side, each side believes on the topic. Right. And that's more what I try to get across with what I'm teaching this class, is like not so much what I think we should do to reduce gun violence. I mean, certainly I've listened to the arguments and have my own personal opinions one way or the other, but I think it's more important to give my readers what different sides are arguing, what they think, and then people can make up their own minds. But the way that I feel like
that has led to some frustration on my part that I've had to try to check the feeling that I put in more effort trying to understand, say, every town's positions, and I can recite them backwards and forwards, and I don't feel that level of commitment is a two-way street. I feel like there's a lot, because I see common mistakes, and not just mistakes, but also just falsehoods pushed by a lot of different activist groups. And it's like, I don't feel like you actually took the time to sit down and learn. You just know there's something you don't like and you want it to change, and that's fine, I get that. But if we're going to have a reasonable, and not just even reasonable, but a productive back and forth, or even a negotiation, like, you got to know it you're talking about. It's as simple as that. And so we go back to the newsrooms, like, I can speculate all day long about why more effort isn't made to make sure reporters, not even the entire newsroom, but at least the people who cover this stuff, aren't better equipped to deal with, to talk about it. And I don't know if it's cultural. Like, look, they've never been in gun culture. To them, maybe it's embarrassing, so they never bothered to learn about any of this stuff. There's an over-reliance on experts, say, but as you and I both know, a lot of experts actually don't know what they're talking about. It's usually someone who's like, I used to be an X branch of the military, and I think he was like, okay, yeah. But then, like, you have these moments, so like, that's fine. You try to learn the arguments, but you also try to present them. So, like, when I would report on these issues, whenever I would report, actually, this happened a lot when I was at the Examiner. People would come to me and they'd be like, "You're the gun guy." I'm like, "Well, I'm not an expert or anything." And they're like, "I actually don't know anything about rifles. Is what I wrote correct?" And look it over and be like, "Well, actually, technically, no. So just there you go." Fantastic. And then they would never ask again because they learned after that first time. I was like, fine. But like, I get people aren't in the culture. I get that. What I don't understand is how newsrooms can kind of continue along, because maybe it's like I was saying, it's embarrassing. They think it's like beneath them, maybe like redneck culture, whatever. I don't know that. That's all pure speculation. The point is, it hurts their reporting. People won't trust them because maybe they don't put an emphasis on it, but there are millions of people out there who know what they're talking about when it comes to this. And they see you saying something like chainsaw bayonets. They're never going to take your reporting seriously after that. It just becomes a gag. So I don't understand. It's self-defeating. Why not put in just a little bit of energy into making sure you don't clown yourself like that?
Yeah. And this is what we start off with the class with, right? What's the problem? Like, trying to identify a problem for these students of like, why does this even matter? Why should you care? And the problem is that if you make significant mistakes in your reporting, you know, maybe your colleagues don't recognize that it's a mistake because they're also not well informed on the issue. But some section of your readership is going to know, and they're going to stop taking you seriously. And at this level, after years of this happening across the board, you get to the point where wide swaths of the country don't take the industry seriously on firearms anymore. And that's
they're certainly not going to take your reporting, and they're certainly not going to take your commentary seriously. So you can write the angriest, most impassioned piece you want on gun reform, but you get basic stuff wrong, everyone's just kind of laugh you out of the room and just be like, you're writing from feelings. You don't actually know what you're talking about. And it's funny because I'm not, there's like two separate cultures that remind me of each other. Car, like classic car culture and gun culture are very similar in how its members sort of behave. I'm not explicitly in either one. The point being, if you get something wrong, they will let you know very fast. You don't know what you're talking about, and they will correct you and they will give you the right information. So gun culture in the United States, broadly speaking, like there are people who actually just know and understand the basics of a firearm. And that's a lot of people. If they come across your reporting and it's clear you don't know what you're talking about, the next obvious question for them is, why am I reading this? Why should I continue reading this? If not to just make fun of it. So it's like your reporting won't be taken seriously. Your commentary certainly won't be taken seriously. So if it is that your purpose is to and achieve some level of, you know, stricter gun legislation, well, how are you going to do that when you're being laughed out of the room every time you open your mouth? So that's why I don't, is it laziness? Is it ignorance? Is it hubris? I don't know. All I know is it exists. And that's one thing that you and I at least are trying to change one semester at a time.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, these are small classes, so it's not, you know, we're not, it's not hundreds.
Hey, of you people. Know, anything bigger than zero is bigger than zero.
I absolutely agree. And I do feel like, the students come away from these classes, and you'll know a little bit better than I do because you continue to interact with them after. And I'm not with them every week like you are. So, but I feel like they do actually learn a significant amount on from this course, and at least from the handling of the firearms, that can usually be somewhat revelatory for a number of these students. And it gives them, especially because some things, like for instance, silencers or suppressors, right? We often will have a suppressor demonstration as part of our range trip, so that people can have, like, because there's a very well ingrained popular culture view of what a silencer does or suppressor does. Yeah. And in real life, that's not actually how they work. And so it can be, but they do have a legitimate substantial effect. It's just not movie style assassin effect or John Wick chapter 2, where they're shooting in the train station and no one notices.
Just walking and nobody knows.
Yeah, that's not how you would know that people are shooting at each other.
You know very fast.
That's not how suppressors work in real life. That's why people yell at you if you call them silencers instead of suppressors, because they don't actually silence. As I explained to some of the students, I have a different view on this than some gun rights activists, because the guy who invented them called them silencers. His company was called Silencer Co. The ATF also calls them silencers under the National Firearms Act. And of course, the largest maker today is still called Silencer Co. But I get the objection to this idea that they make around sound. It's basically just marketing. It's good to some things like that, or how an AR-15 actually feels to shoot in practice.
Right.
Those are things that I think are good practical lessons that you're not going to get from just hearing about it in a classroom.
Right. There's a certain level, especially when it comes to something like guns, or I would say cars or sports. Like it's one thing to just read about it, but at the very least, you got to look at it. And if you can get your hands on it, that's even better. Yeah. And yeah. So the AR, I don't expect people to go out and become professional shooters, sports shooters, but I would like for them to get that color that they can add into the stories, whatever they write about. They now know how much it weighs, what it smells like, what it sounds like, the reverberations when you're standing next to it. It's all color that can be then incorporated into your story, and you can actually write something that's really compelling and well-informed. And it's as simple as that. And I do think it is a bit of an indictment that we have, that I feel like we had to invent this because nobody else really does it. And it is what it is. I would like to see a change on a national level just so we can have better informed reporting and therefore a better informed populace. Cause I have many people in my life, family and friends who, differ from me in terms of the Second Amendment and gun rights. And to hear a lot of the stuff that gets repeated back, it's like, that's not true, but I've heard that about 100 times because it's the same stuff gets recycled through different newsrooms. It's not even the same one. It's not necessarily, I wouldn't even say there's one newsroom that's like the worst offender. I think it's all kind of equal across the board. Versus like, it's just not great.
It's a systemic issue for sure inside the industry where, like I said, earlier, it's not like you can point to one particular reporter or one newsroom that's so much that's leading the sort of ignorance charge, if that's the way you want to put it.
Katie Couric, but like, you know, that was a while ago even.
Yeah, I mean, Katie Couric's, that main issue with her documentary was just that they edited it to be...
Yeah, it wasn't even playing ignorance, it was just playing
that's different.
That's a different...
Although that does get into one of the other things that I start off the class with, is like, just one of the issues that journalists face is a lack of credibility on this topic because of continuous mistakes, often of the same basic kind, right? Like, I mean, semi-automatic versus fully automatic is a pretty huge distinction that people don't understand often in newsrooms, which is that really gets at the level of ignorance involved. But because anyone who owns a firearm or has shot firearms should have a pretty good grasp on the difference between semi-automatic and fully automatic.
Right. You know what you know. It's one of those situations. So we get into an issue where, like you're saying, systemic. It's you wonder if it's, if not just plain ignorance, but there's a, I mean, this, we could talk for hours about this, but I'll just say very briefly, like there's also, in terms of a lack of general knowledge, there's also a lack of transparency and accountability for when they do get it wrong. And they do have it pointed out. And instead of saying, hey, you know, we got that wrong and we'll do better, it's very often to not even acknowledge it, and to sometimes not even print a correction or an editor's note. Yeah. They just let it stay. Like, so very briefly with the Katie Couric thing, she was, you know, dead to rights. She selectively edited. She was dishonest. And rather than apologize or anything, you know, her and her producers came out and, you know, we did it. This is work we're proud of, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, it's a lack of ability to learn, but also a total lack of humility that goes often hand in hand with the bad report.
Yeah. And in her case as well, the producers on that documentary, this is from a documentary called, I believe it was what, Guns Down, something like
that. I don't remember what it was called. I can't remember. It was a series. Wow.
She did a series of documentaries, and there were actually issues with the other food-based documentary she did before that, similar issues. I broke all these stories, by the way.
Oh, I remember
the day. But you know, and then I can give you another recent example too. Politico was reporting on the Undetectable Firearms Act getting renewed as part of one of the recent legislative packages that was passed, because it had would have expired otherwise. And they reported on it as, you know, a ghost gun ban or a ban on unserialized firearms being passed. But that's, they're two completely separate policies that don't do even close to the same thing. Renewing the Undetectable Firearms Act just keeps the status quo the way it is, because that has just been around for a long time. That's about, basically, it's a law from, really, from, I believe, from the 80s that was about making sure that there's enough metal in a gun for it to set off a metal detector. That's what that law does. And then, you know, banning unserialized guns, well, that would be a radical departure from current policy. It would basically ban all homemade firearms, and isn't something that exists. I mean, there's proposals for it. Some states have done this, but you get the idea. They're completely different policies. And Politico had reported on this win for Democrats by having this ghost gun ban put in, and which like surprised me, because I was like, what happened? There's some brand new gun bill got passed that I was never, no one talked about until right now. And I thought that they'd probably made this mistake, but they hadn't. This is another classic reporter thing where you don't actually link back to like the text of something. That happens way too often in our industry.
Court
rulings or the text of bills and stuff. Right. Like, Jesus, just give me a link so I can go. I want to make sure what you're saying is right.
No, I'd like to see the source material. It's very
linked to all that stuff in our reports. It's a big emphasis of mine. But hey, regardless, you know, so I tracked this down through my own sources and, yeah, figured out, oh, no, they're talking about the Undetectable Firearms Act, not a ghost gun ban or something of that nature, an unserialized gun ban, right? And like I told, like I repeatedly tweeted at them about this, and no one ever responded or changed anything. And I believe if you still go, you go, look, they just have the wrong information.
The language of the report never got amended?
As far as I know. They never changed anything.
And now Politico's readers are worse off for a single report. So it's like, again, it happens. And they are, I know people know and hear this. I don't understand why there's not a bigger change to get it right.
And then I'll say too, that going back to the Katie Couric example, this isn't just like about credibility either. It can be legal issues that you run into if you don't know what you're doing when you're right. reporting on firearms. Because another thing that Katie Couric's producers did on that documentary is that they crossed state lines to buy handguns from private sellers to show that it was like they were trying. This is a common thing that happens. This happens every couple of years. A reporter will go out and try to show that the gun laws are too loose, essentially. And what they actually end up doing is breaking them and committing felonies. I think the most famous example of this, and one that I also use, is David Gregory, Meet the Press, when he was interviewing Wayne LaPierre after the Sandy Hook shooting. He pulled out a 30-round magazine like this, like I'm doing right now here. And he said, why should these be legal? The difference between me doing it right now and when he did it is that right now I'm in Virginia, where these are currently legal. And he was in Washington, D.C., where they were not legal to possess. Sorry, I dropped my magazine. So that's a crime that he committed live on national television, that there was actually a police affidavit written up for his arrest. Now, he never was arrested. And this is also a common thing that happens in these cases. Reporters are often given leniency for accidentally breaking laws. There's one in that I reported on as well, in addition to the Couric one, where a CBS reporter, they were trying to show that it's easy for somebody without a normal person, the CBS reporter who doesn't have a criminal record, apparently, or any sort of disqualifying records, to own a gun. They were trying to show that it was easy to go in and buy the gun and leave the same day for an AR-15. They did this in Alexandria, Virginia, which at one of my local gun stores at the time. But for some reason, they did this undercover and they didn't tell the gun store what they were doing. And so they lied to the gun store, they lied to the licensed dealer about why they were buying this gun and who it was really for. Because at the end of the report, they're like, oh, she didn't keep this gun. She gave it away and had it disposed of by a third party, which, you know, is a straw purchase. That's like it wasn't actually for her. She wasn't the actual buyer. And that's a huge problem. And she got reported to the ATF for that after I asked the gun store about what had happened. And so there's credibility issue with not having base level information about firearms when you're going to report on them. There's also like a legal issue. If you might, like, reporters have continually broken the law because they don't understand it when they go to do these stories.
Right. And it also has a knock on effect in terms of, like you're saying, credibility and trust. They're like, well, who are you writing for? Who are you reporting for? You're reporting for the public. You're doing it for the public interest. And you probably wouldn't be surprised at all. So when we do range day at the NJC, we work with a couple of different, we've worked now with three different ranges. And every single time I contact them, kind of out of the blue, introduce myself and explain to them that I want to bring a group of journalists to their range, every single time they kind of back away slowly. And, you know, there's a very sort of clear, are you trying to screw me? You're trying to screw me right now, aren't you?
And that CBS report gives you an example of why people feel that way.
And I'm like, that's the thing. I don't blame them. There's no part of me was like, hey, man. I was like, yeah, no, I get it. I 100% get it. You have been trained at this point to expect that if a reporter comes calling, you think I'm trying to screw you. And in fact, one of them, we'll just speak of them anonymously. One of the ranges, they kind of confided in me. Every time there's a major shooting in the DMV area, for your viewers, the DMV area being the district, Maryland and Virginia. Every time there's a major shooting, reporters come to them and ask, did you sell the gun? Did you sell the ammo? Every single time. And they're like, we had nothing to do with this, but we're asked it every single time. So yes, when you call us and say you want to bring, you know, 20 journalists onto our shooting range, like, I don't think so. But no, none of them have ever barred us, luckily. I've always explained exactly what we're trying to do. And every single one we've paired with has been fantastic. I've been very pleased.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think but that's something you have to do to build trust with anyone in the firearms industry when you're trying to report on, because there is a very negative association with the industry, between, you know, the firearms industry and the news industry. And often because, you know, a lot of reporters treat them as adversarial off the bat. Not everyone in the firearms industry is a good guy, right? Like, I'm not saying that, but you shouldn't go in necessarily with this attitude of like, they're doing that. That, you know, think back to that CBS report. Like, what are you even trying to show in that report? That's what didn't make
right. It's, sense it's like those weird viral videos you see every now and then of people just kind of harassing, you know, like fast food workers. I'm like, what are you trying to prove, right? That guy's just doing his job. He's not doing anything wrong. Like, you have a beef with something bigger than this person who's just doing their job and like just living their life.
Right.
And like, I remember seeing that. I was like, that CBS report is like, the takeaway is a law-abiding citizen can legally purchase a firearm in America. Right. And I was like, yeah, okay. You can also buy a car if you'd like.
You can do it quickly was sort of the point of the report, I guess, is what what I seemed to be getting across. But that's the whole point of the system. It's supposed to be instant.
And this is to the larger point that to them, this was all news. The news was news to the newsmen, which is, I mean, try untangling that. That's a little bit of Joseph Heller right there. But like the fact that they didn't know this, that's actually an indictment on your industry right now. You're not proving anything to the readers. All you're proving is your own ignorance, which sure, if you want to do that, but not in the news industry. The one thing you need is credibility and trust. And if you throw it away story after story and then refuse to learn from the same mistakes, you have no one to blame for yourself. You can get mad that people are flocking to Joe Rogan for their news, but you know they're leaving for a reason. It's not completely in a vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. I just, you know, it's unfortunate. And to do it the way they did it undercover, like, why you could have, if their point was, you can buy this is all perfectly legal to do, and you can walk out with a gun quickly because the background check came back fast. And some people want waiting periods or something. Like, there's obviously debates. You can legitimate discussions of policy that exist. There are people on either side that have different points of view, and you can explain all that if you know what you're talking about, right? You'd be a much better story that way. If you actually knew what you're talking about, you could get people who are representative of either side or of these different positions on how this gun buying should work in America or whatever, you'd end up with a much better story that doesn't have the ATF call on you. And who knows what happened after that. They didn't send her to jail as far as I'm aware, but I'm sure it wasn't a pleasant experience for this reporter. And this is the other half of it. It's like, you want to learn these things because you want to be credible for your audience and you don't want to misinform them. But also, like, gun laws are serious, and if you violate them, you might end up having to go down to talk to ATF agents about why you did something.
Right, and then you accidentally prove the opposite of your point, which is it's too easy to do this. Like, no, they take this stuff pretty seriously, which is kind of contra the entire narrative that gets pushed with that, like that CBS story.
As far as things stand today, you know, you're somebody running a program where you're trying to bring up the next generation of reporters here and trying to give them a good start into the industry. Where do you see this all going? What are you hoping for to come out of, you know, this range day program we're doing? What's your view of the future here?
I mean, I feel like I'm almost bipolar in that I have good days and bad days in terms of, like, you know, this industry is, you know, we're gonna put it back together. It's on the upswing, and then there's some days where it's like, you know, a lot of this feels pretty irreparable. Like, it's just a mess, especially after reading like that NPR report, just about how entrenched certain sort of how political activists tend to join journalism more and more in numbers, or at least people feel more emboldened to get into political activism while being a reporter. Where do I see this going? Like, if there is going to be any sort of long-term effect from what I'm doing, I probably won't be alive for it. But the idea is just one person at a time. Just if I can get, you know, two classes every year, just a little more familiar with this topic, that can actually have a knock-on effect where, look, maybe the editors at the Post or the Times don't know anything about this, but this one person on the desk does know something about it, and they can catch it before it goes to print. You can actually have effective, trustworthy, credible news reporting. So, you know, the idea being that polity is better informed. We can actually have informed debates about these things going forward. So you're not just, you know, you have David Hogg screaming something completely unintelligible about bump stocks at Wayne LaPierre, and like nothing's happening. It's just people yelling and fundraising off of each other. And meanwhile, people like me who just want to be left alone and have a Second Amendment sort of protected and respected, that's all kind of just fodder in a larger cultural war battle. What I want is for informed reporters, so we can get more away from the sort of culture war side of things and get towards legislating reasonably and realistically to sort of address some of these issues. If that doesn't sound too vague, but that's what I got.
No, that's great. And I think if we could have more people just learning basics. I mean, I will say in my experience with a lot of major media reporters from, you know, the largest outlets out there, I have traditionally gotten a lot of questions from them trying to make sure that they're accurate on it. This is obviously I'm one person and you're one person, and we can't be the ombudsman on guns for the entire industry or whatever. It's not realistic.
That's right? A good sign, though. That you got people just hey, look, I don't want to make a fool of myself. So can you?
From every outlet.
That's fantastic.
And all the major outlets across the board, Times, the Post, the NBC, you know, wherever. And obviously CNN has hired me to be a contributor. And I do also help whenever there's questions on stories there. So there is that desire. I think I still feel among your beat reporters, your print reporters, your folks gathering news to try and get things right as much as they possibly can. They don't want to misinform their audience.
Right.
It's just a lack of knowledge usually is the problem, or a lack of variety in sourcing is another issue too, right? Like they hear from one side and not the other so much, or they hear from the reasonable representatives of one side and the crazy representatives of another. You know what I mean? Like you got to search out and try and find people to source from too, to try and get representative views so that you can inform your audience again. But it all goes down to that at the end of the day. You don't want to try and manipulate your audience. You want to try and inform them. You don't want to misinform them. That should be your goals.
Right. Like what's the old saying is like, don't attribute malice to that, which can be explained by plain ignorance. I don't think many reporters are actively trying to get their reporting wrong. I think a lot of it's just plain ignorance. And part of what I hope to accomplish, you know, pairing up with you is we can start sending off to newsrooms across the country, just one at a time, with each new class, at least somebody on the news desk will actually know. Hey, by the way, no, you can't buy a fully automatic AR-15. And AR doesn't mean assault rifle. Just very basic stuff. Very basic.
Well, you start there
and we can build up.
Expensive.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can, but good luck. You have to take out a mortgage on your house.
It's a very, yes, $30,000 or whatever. Right. Anyway, really appreciate you coming on and giving us some insight into NJC and into, you know, being here to have this conversation about the program that we're running. And you know, maybe people outside of NJC will start to adopt the same sort of training and standards to try and bring a bit more knowledge. You know, I've taken reporters from the Atlantic to the range for when they were going to go work on. Like, it's not, this isn't something where nobody is interested in this stuff. It's just something that goes beyond teaching one or two reporters here or there. It's an industry-wide issue that needs a more significant response. And I think the first step is what we're doing at NJC. At least we've got some formalized program, and hopefully we'll see more of the industry try and come up with something similar or adopt our model. I'd be more than happy to share.
That'd be fine with me.
Yeah, if people are interested in NJC and want to find out more about it, where should they go?
Very simple. It's just njc.com. You can go there. You can apply if you're interested. Or if you're interested in learning more about it, you can email me directly. It's just B as in boy, adams@yaf.org. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right. Fantastic. If you were interested in learning more about the Reload and buying a membership, you can head over to reload.com and do that today. You will, of course, get access to hundreds of pieces of analysis that you will not find anywhere else in the world, on the internet or what have you. You'll also get access to this podcast today early and the opportunity to appear on the show in a member segment. Just respond to your Sunday newsletter that you get as a member. This is another exclusive, of course. And obviously your dues go to making sure we can even do any of this. Without Reload members, the Reload would not exist. And so I really appreciate the support that you give, but it's not just a charity thing. You also get lots of benefit. So that's all we've got for you guys this week. We will see you again real soon.